Move your training into a new chapter. Stay ahead of your competition with the Kinetic Link. The Kinetic Link is a patented lightweight resistance harness designed to develop and strengthen movement patterns for sports performance and rehabilitation. The world's first full body portable training system. Check it out at www.thekineticlink.com or on Instagram at Kinetic Linking.
Welcome to Light Thoughts Sports Training with T. Price. We're collaboration with Real Talk with Coach Morton. Today we have a great episode. I'm T. Price.
I'm Brandon Morton.
What's going on? Charles Proctor. And this episode is sponsored by Nerds. So if y'all see me eating, this is what we doing today.
That's what you on today, Nerds.
I'm on Nerds. Hey. My son left them over here, so I'm going to eat all of them. Let's go.
Well, fellas, it's been a while. Been about 2 weeks. So let's hop right into it. talk about a most unique thing or a unique thing that's happened along your journey to become a coach.
Okay.
I'll start this off, you know. Oh, got James Evan in the background, you know, the godfather of black families.
Joe Jackson will be back.
Always give you something funny, but also the great disciplinarian. a unique thing that happened to me, most people don't know, when I was really getting into coaching, I was in Marietta, Georgia, and I was in grad school for chiropractic school at Life University. And there was a GA at Life University named Chad Black, who, you know, was over the sprints program at Life University at the time. And he and I just collaborated on some things. We started talking and we came up with a ploy to have a track club. And we started in the Black Track Club, which was a professional track club. And then we had likes of Milton Campbell, Robert Jefferson, Robert Wilson, Kevin Jefferson, Milton Mallard, and Butch Reynolds in our program. And we had a great season, great things. And through that, Chad and I say, well, we wanted to try to do some things. And for some of you, we started your programs. We wanted to make a program for track and field, something that's new. People didn't have a track and field program. So we started off garnering interest and going down to Georgia State. And we talked to the cross country coach who was there at the time and trying to get them to invest into a track program. We were saying that, hey, we can build up. We have a person outside who would invest into the scholarships and everything like that for the first year. And then we're dwindling away from the investment as long as the university comes back into it. And so we were looking at there. They decided not to go with track and field that year. And then a year and a half later, they came back and started track and field. And then from that part, we went down to College of Charleston. And they didn't have anything at the time. We had a thing with the AD that was there. And we posed the same thing of how we can start a cross-country track and field program at College of Charleston. And they turned us down. and then within 2 years, they had a track and field program. So then we looked at this place in Texas that we say is a gold mine, is kind of new and everything. We went down to, and I never heard of the place there. He brought it up to me. I was like, well, let's just make the pitch. We went to Corpus Christi, Texas A&M, Corpus Christi, and pitched the whole thing. They weren't interested at the time. Then a year later, they started a program, you know, so that's one of the unique things that people probably don't know about me. Within the Black Track Club, professional track club, we had Milton Campbell, who went on to win at the, or came in second at the U.S., at the World Indoor Championships that year in the 400, and was a part of the 4x4 that had the world record holders in the 4x4. that year from in the Black Track Club, and then went on to try to start some programs out there who are up and going right now.
I got you. I guess I'll go. I'm not supposed to be coaching right now. It was after my brief stint at Coastal Carolina due to my extracurriculars. I was fortunate enough to my head coach, my old head coach, started coaching back in my alma mater, and he allowed me to come back and volunteer coach. And I did that for about a year or two, but you know, end up getting the family and having to provide and pay bills. So I had to go get a job and all that stuff. And so I totally away from track. And I was actually supposed to be moving to DC. All my friends from the Maryland, DC area, and my parents had moved back home once I graduated high school. And this was around the recession. It was hard to find jobs. And it was like, all right, you coming home. You know what I'm saying? You got a daughter to take care of. You coming home to me. And so literally I was 2 weeks away from packing. And I tell this woman all the time, she saved me. And she's like, no, Charles, I need you more. But Ginger Belka called me and probably around December 29th of 2009. And she had just taken over the head coaching job at Richland Northeast, my alma mater. And she, Charles, I want you to come back and coach the Sprinters. Yeah. And it was, I always say it was just God, because I mean I was totally out of track and field, but that was really the only thing I ever loved. And she called me, and I stayed home. My parents were hot with me. Because I didn't come up there, but it was just, even to this day, I'm grateful she called me. I'm glad I made the decision to stay because of where it's taken me. And so the unique thing for me was that I'm not even supposed to be coaching track right now. I'm supposed to be in the DMV area working a government job. That was like that. That's what I'm supposed to be doing, but she called me and she gave me an opportunity to continue within a sport that I fell in love with at the age of 12, and it was just an opportunity I couldn't pass. And then within 2 years, I was the head coach of the men, and it just continued to progress to where I'm at now. And so that's my unique story, man. I went from, which I don't mind always telling people the story, because I think it was like probably one of the greatest things that happened for me. I went from getting kicked off the team at Coastal because I didn't handle my business, to now being in a position to help young men and women go to school and potentially get their education paid for, man. So I'm super grateful for Ginger Bell for making that phone call. People thought I was crazy for staying home and not going and doing what, you know, was supposed to be the best thing for me. And so, yeah, that was my new unique one.
Well, I wouldn't say it's unique. Mine is almost like a testimony, man. Like, graduated school, did work for the Charlotte Bobcats, Charlotte Knights, was not paying enough. So I got a job at Sprint, the call center in Charlotte, right out of college. Hated it. Literally, I had two homeboys that had strokes on the job because nobody calls in to tell you they love their phone service. And you're taking calls all day long. So it was a really stressful job. One of the top salesmen in there, they wanted to move me to Indiana to help start a call center. This was around the time Sprint and Nextel were merging. Didn't go. Just met my wife at the time. And, you know, me and her used to have Bible study. And, you know, I remember it was October 2006. And she was like, you know, what do you want out of life? And I'm like, I would love to coach. By this time, I realized I wanted to be in the sport. You know, been answering phone calls for about 2 years now. So, you know, obviously by January, I'd love to have my level one and be coaching somewhere and in grad school, but didn't really think it was going to happen. But, you know, with her help, I mean, she worked at Winthrop at the time. She sent my transcripts off to Campbell University without me even knowing. I applied for the grad assistant position there, ended up being a part-time assistant coach position. Well, first I went and got my level one. Then I applied for the, I applied to grad school, got the job there as a part-time assistant. Didn't do grad school the first semester, just was a part-time assistant. Anyway, the next year I ended up asking my mentor, Patrick, should I get my level two or should I get my master's? And he's like, well, do your master's. Now that way you got a backup plan if coaching don't work out. So, you know, I'm just like, well, I'm gonna get the money from, I got to get accepted. So that's when she sent my transcripts without me even knowing. And, you know, they partially accepted me because I was a little slack in college. but I got accepted. I did my master's in education, exercise science. After I got accepted, you know, I had to find the money because they wouldn't pay for it. Did all that stuff, got my money together. Did 2 years of grad school and was out. And I remember getting the job at ETSU and talking to Coach Walker, like, hey, man, I get married this week. I just want a job when I walk down the aisle. I don't care what, you know. He was like, well, just tell me you want the job. And I'm like, well, I want it. So he's like, well, it's yours. Let's have dinner tonight and we'll shake on it. And, you know, I'm just like, man, all this stuff just fell into place, you know. And, you know, I always just give glory to God for that because I'm not that good. I can't make stuff happen like that. I can't ask for something in October and then and ask for it to happen by the new year. And by the new year, I'm literally on Campbell's campus doing a high jump practice. And I'm just like, wow, like, I wouldn't, you know, it was just, that was just my testimony. And like I said, to be able to go on and go to grad school, be the first of my family to do their master's. And I had to do this because long story short, my wife was doing her master's and, you know, I remember going out to dinner with her and her friends and they were all, they had these nice jobs and they're like, Brenda, what do you do? And I'm like, I'm a customer service rep at Sprint. And I'm just like, I got to do better. But, it was just a lot of stuff fell in place for me. So my whole story about how I even got into coaching was very, for me, it was very unique because things don't typically happen for me in that, you know, I guess that fashion, you know, that perfectly, that sterile with no interruption. I had a 4.0 in grad school. I mean, So, you know, it was just like, man, all this stuff is happening. And, I always, you know, like I said, that for me, that's always been my testimony to, you know, any young male or female that's looking to strike out and go after their dreams, go after something that they want, you know. I mean, you could do anything, you know, that you put your mind to, you know, pray about it and you'll be surprised at what happens.
Yes, sir.
Won't he do it?
Yeah.
Yes, he will.
And it didn't hurt that my wife was there every step of the way, kind of pushing me forward, even when I was having doubt, you know. I mean, she was my girlfriend at the time, but, you know, it that was just amazing to me, like a, almost like a movie, the way everything happened for me, because I was miserable at Sprint. But, anyway, next topic. What is the next topic? What are we, We'll talk about, we got Christmas, well, Thanksgiving break coming up. For us, I mean, I don't know, Tyree, I don't think y'all aren't really, but you can talk about what you normally do over breaks. We're getting out in Thanksgiving, and they're not coming back to January. My kids aren't coming back to January 11th. So what do you guys normally do? Over, what are your goals with your athletes and your focus with your athletes over these long breaks?
I'll go first since y'all's is crazy for this year right here. Especially for me with high school, I mean, what, we're missing three days during Thanksgiving break and then 2 weeks, and the majority of them are here for the 2 weeks. And so, I mean, there isn't much difference that I have to change during the breaks. for my high school kids. The big thing, once you pose the question, the big thing that I get is when my college kids comes back. And I'm fortunate and grateful, you know, that, you know, when my kids come back, when my college kids come back in town, they come back and they practice with me. And so I'm able to look at the plan that y'all have given them, and I learned so much through the break, because I'm texting back and forth with the college coach. Hey, you know, what exactly is it that you're looking for? What do you need? What is it something that you really need them to harp on? And then everybody's plan is totally different. I can have three sprinters come back over the break and everybody has something totally different. And so I'm learning so much from other coaches on their rhyme and reason of why they do what they do at this portion of the year. And so, you know, for my high school kids, you know, the plan is already written out. We continue business as usual. I'm fortunate enough to where I'm not going to be without them like y'all are without y'all kids for at least a month. I'm not without mine for a month. Even during this 2-week break that we get, out of the 14 days, I'll probably see them 9. And so, you know, we conduct business as usual. But when my college kids come back in town, I'm able to look at the workouts that their coach has sent them, decipher that, talk to the coach, understand why they do certain things, and learn from that. And so that's typically what my breaks look like, man. My high school kids is business as usual. For my college kids, you know, it's trying to make sure I do my best to send them back, and I send them back ready to go, because most of them got a track meet the first week they come back. Majority of them, two if they're lucky. Majority of them is that first week that they're back. And I need to execute whatever plan that it is that their coach has the best of my ability and make sure that they're ready. And so that's typically what my breaks look like.
Now, let me ask you something, Charles. Do you ever see anything that makes you feel like, man, I should be doing this on the next level?
No. And I'm going to just leave that at no, because I don't want to do it at the next level. But I do see some things. It's like, and I have to call, like, why? Why? Like, not that I'm not going to, because whatever you send the kids, I'm going to make, because the last thing I want to happen is they get back and they're not in the shape, or they're not executing in the way that the coach wants them to be. And it's like, why didn't you do this, that, and the third? Because I sent it. So you're going to do whatever they send, because at this time, you're not my child. You're not mine no more. You're theirs. And so I'm going to make sure you do that. But I am going to call them like, hey, man, what the hell is this? And why? Just tell me why. I'm going to execute it exactly how the paper say it. I just need to know why.
Two things right there. Why is a beautiful question. I mean, enough people don't ask it. And note to high school coaches, what this man just said, he's not trying to take over. It's not about him. It's not about his ego. He's trying to do what's best for the athlete and give them a continuation of what they've been doing already. Because, like you said, you asked why, because I can see somebody at a meet doing something that I would not do, but I have no idea what that person did before or after. And same thing when you get these workouts for Christmas break, something can look, you know, you got some programs that are hopping right into it. You know, with me, my kids haven't run since March. So my general prep phase is a lot longer this year. We're doing a lot more teaching this year than we normally do. So when they get when my kids go home, their program's going to look a little bit. And we don't have a meet in December now. You know, we're not going to a meet in December. I'm not trying to get them. I mean, I'm trying to get them ready for the season. But, you know, if they see my program, it's going to look a little bit like it's behind almost, because we're doing a lot of teaching and the conditioning is going to come. So I'm being very patient this year as so not to get them hurt. So you may see a program like mine, or you may see a program where they're, you know, they're getting after it right away, you know, and that I just think that a lot of high school coaches can learn a lot from what you just said, the asking the why part. No matter how crazy it looks, I don't think that's ever a dumb question to ask. I ask it a lot.
Yeah.
I'll go next since I'm already talking. And then Tyree, you can go. Right. Because you had girl at national championships and stuff, so I ain't, you know, I'm going to let the man go and shed his light last. As far as us, what we're trying to do, like I said, you know, normal over Christmas break, it's just a necessary evil. I heard Vince Anderson say this a long time ago. Some of them are going to work out over the break. Some of them are not going to work out over the break. If I had to put it in general terms, I just want them to stay active. Don't pick up any bad weight. Don't pick up any bad habits. I don't need you ready to come. I don't even need you ready. I mean, if you do, great, but I don't even need you in the kind of shape when you get back, you're ready to PR. I just need you to be in shape when you get back and not ready to embarrass yourself when we go to this first meeting, essentially. Because, you know, if I'm not there, the teaching aspect of it, the acceleration work, or some of the stuff that I can see with my eye, nobody's going to even be there. So I don't really, you know, I don't really put a huge emphasis on, you know, I want them to be technically sound. By that time, they should be starting to feel some stuff, and I do want them to feel it. But if they don't, you know, I understand they might not. So we don't really put a huge emphasis on a lot of the technical aspects when they go home. Well, I can't watch some of them. So it's more about conditioning, staying in some kind of shape. I mean, with this break, we're going to have Thanksgiving dinner, and we're going to have Christmas dinner, and I won't see them in between then. So I just need you to stay in some kind of shape. And, you know, for our girls, I'm going to mix in speed, and they're not even going to know where it's at. But, you know, every day we're going to do at least 4 to 5 accelerations after our warm-up. You know, we talk about 5, that's 25 accelerations per week. That's, I don't know how many, is like 100 per month. So, you know, we're going to get some kind of, the totality of it is a lot once you add it up. But my main concern over those breaks is staying in some kind of shape. And I know with my kids, if they're in shape, they're going to be confident. They can be technically sound if they're not in shape. It really don't make a difference. They're not going to go into that meet and give me what I know they're capable of. So, again, like I said, we just want to make sure we're in shape, especially over this particular break with so much time off. We just want to make sure we keep their work capacity at a certain place. And I'll handle the technical stuff when they get back. Tyree?
Well, usually going into the breaks, you know, I pretty much give them their calendar for the break. Usually it's each month what we're doing, so they'll know what we're doing. The only difference is, like you said, Brandon, is like you're not there, so your eyes are not on them. Because usually at that time, if my eyes are on you, I know how to make adjustments to what the workouts are going. Around this time, they pretty much going to have their, going into the Christmas or Thanksgiving break, they'll have their workout for that. So now we're talking about December and January. So they have their calendars. They know pretty much what they're going to do. I try to get them to keep in contact with me. Let me know what you're doing through the workout. Also, kind of how you felt when you did the workout, if you were able to do it. And so they try to keep in contact with me and let me know how they felt going through the workout, what wasn't accomplished during the workout, if they weren't able to get to the facility, to complete those type of workouts. And then, or even beforehand, is letting me know if you can't make it, okay, then we'll try to make an adjustment. Can you get this and can you do that? And making those type of adjustments. So for this collegiate part of it is a little different. Usually I try to get a lot of good technical things so they'll know exactly what's going on through the workouts. But with a lack of it this year, it's more so of like trying to dummy it down just a little bit from what my usual workouts are, because we haven't gone through all of the technical issues problems that we try to do early on in the year. So this would be probably slightly dummy down, but still trying to go through how we're going to try to get better in those workouts. And I have a post-collegiate guy who I'm transitioning from the 400. He was a 400, 200 runner. And I explained, hey, you're not a 4.2 runner. You are 800 runner, you know. And so he's transitioning. And what I send him the workouts, just about, he's very good at keeping in contact with me. And it's like, oh, this is how I felt. This is what happened. This is the distance I covered in this part, even though he has the full workouts for the whole month. But he's always, he's probably one of the most, the better of keeping in contact. He calls me on every day. Like, this is what I did. This is the distance I did. This is how I felt. And so he's making that transition. He's feeling the transition of going through. So that's one of the things that we would try to have happen is make sure there's some type of communication going on with the athletes and myself to know what's going on. And everybody's not be going through the same things. You give them the same workout, but yet they may not be going the same thing. So you have to make adjustments on the fly. And then knowing that type of mindset of the athlete and then kind of how their body may either how you can build them up or how the workouts may tear them down. So trying to add a psychological part of it to keep them going and keep them motivated throughout. And that's the one thing that I would say for some of you college coaches, make sure that you keep the communication so that they stay motivated through this lapse of time and this gap of time. So if you keep them motivated, then they will probably do a little bit more in those workouts. And a lot of my workouts are, the key to those workouts over this break is that recovery. You know, just staying on a recovery. Even if you don't get the distance I want or the time I want, stay with the recovery and we're still working. We're getting you in shape, one, or keeping you in shape. And preparing you for the next level, what the workouts are.
When you say recovery, are you saying like recovery between reps or like recovery
no, day? We're talking about recovery between reps, recovery between sets. Usually I have a thing like even for my post-collegiate guy, there's a recovery weekend here as well. And it's like, look, we're going hard. And then this recovery week is going to hit you by surprise. You're going to like, well, we're going kind of hard. And then we're backing off a little bit. There's a reason for it.
Yeah.
You know, and you got to make sure that when we're taking whatever days are off or part of what, if it's a pool type recovery or just getting ice baths or a massage or whatever we want to do that week for the recovery, is you're standing by that. So because the next week we're about to hit you again, you know, but you need that time off in order for your body to really reinvent itself in a sense, so that we're ready to go to the next level of training.
One last thing I'll add to that is I like to have points of reference for them to kind of have access to once they start workout. So our accelerations are really important. So, you know, we'll do 300s, and instead of saying, you know, 4 times 300, I'll say 4 times 300 meter accelerations. And they understand that on a longer run, you can only run at the speed that you build in acceleration. And so for my girls, that is, if I say 4 times 300 and 4 times 300 meter accelerations, for them, those are two totally different things. If I say 300, they're gonna stand up and just start running. They're gonna be all over the place. If I say 400-300 meter accelerations, they're going to get down, they're going to push, and they understand that hit the time is all dictated by the momentum that you build the first couple steps. So I would say, you know, during the year, be building in some points of reference. Your vocabulary is very important, you know, what you're saying to them and how they comprehend it, because you could, you know, you could hear one thing and they hear something totally different. So, you know, like I said, when I write that workout and it's sent to them, they'll know the difference between regular 300s and how I'm gonna want them done. So, you know, that's just a tidbit of information for any coach. You know, just have a point of reference to everything should kind of tie in anyway. You know, you shouldn't be doing anything just to do it in your program. I feel like everything we try to do ties in. So those four accelerations, you know, that we're not just doing that for the 100 or the 200. We're doing that for the 400 as well, you know. And so if we run the 300, they damn sure better be able to, you know, associate that acceleration with that 300 or 250 or 150 or whatever we're doing. So that's just something to keep in mind when you guys are sending home those workouts.
And to piggyback on what Brandon said earlier, when he was talking back to the high school coaches, my high school coaches understand once they are running at the next level, your job is done. So when they come home for the break, it is not for you to deviate from whatever the hell the coach sent because you think your plan works best. Understand. Just as when they were with you, you had a plan for them. Now there's a plan for them. You cannot deviate. Because guess what? When you do, now you don't fuck that kid up. We weren't even supposed to go here today, but since Brandon brought it up, I'll go here because I've seen it and I'll talk about it because I've done it early on. I've done it and I see coaches. Brandon said it earlier, throw the ego aside. Your job is done. You put them in a position to be recruited. They were recruited. They signed a scholarship. They are under somebody else's guidance now. Correct? Great. Your job is done. When that child goes off, once they start practice in August, they're under a certain plan that's been made for them. You don't get a month to deviate from that and send them back. And now you and the kid, because it ain't the college coach, is you and the kid calling back and forth and texting back and forth, wondering why shit ain't going the way it's supposed to go. See, they ain't going to say it because this position they in, I can say this. Look, stop messing these kids up thinking your plan is better than the college coaches. 9 times out of 10, you were in the room when they decided where they was going to go. You believed in what said school. You believed in said coach. Allow them to do the job. When they come to you over the break, they come, matter of fact, it ain't even a paper no more. They just show it to you on a text message through the phone. Implement the workout. If you have a question, please ask. There's nothing wrong with asking, and I have not come across a coach. And I've sent a few kids to a few different schools. I've never met a coach that had a problem with explaining. Call, understand, so you can get out your feelings. And make sure that kid is ready to roll when you send their ass back to school. Thank you, high school coaches.
Boy, woo! Hey, we gonna have to cut that and make that a clip, a preview trailer or something.
Man, look here. Look here. I see it too often. And this is where it happens. It's typically because right after that, we're at an indoor meet, right? Mm-hmm. And you ask, hey, how's so-and-so doing? Oh, man, that coach ain't doing shit with him. Man. And y'all know this. Like, so, come on, man. You just deviated a whole month from this man playing, and now you complain. Man, get out of here.
Yeah. And another thing, you know, I'm saying how, you know, you just, now you got to deal with a kid that comes back that is not believing in you and your program, and you spend the entire indoor season playing tug of war with them, trying to get them to come along with the rest of the team, and they wonder why they're not running fast. And you know, it's just
one of the best things that was said to me going to a break my freshman year. If you do everything I told you to do and it fails, I messed up. But if you deviate and it fails, I don't know what to go back and fix because I don't know what you did. So it's no longer on me. And that has stuck with me. Shout out to Tim Vaught. Love you to death. That has stuck with me to this day. Yeah. When I came back from break, I couldn't blame it on him because I deviated. Oh, and so it's just like, regardless, and again, that's why I asked the why, because regardless how outlandish I might think the workout is, I'm not going to put my child in position to say when it gets down to the end of the season and you having your end of the season interviews and things didn't go right. I want my kids to be able to say, I did everything that you said. So now the coach has a point of reference to go back and fix. But if I deviate from it, I just put him in a bad position. And I put the coach in a bad position because now the coach don't even know where the hell he went wrong, because realistically, he might not have went wrong.
Let me add on to that, which you said. The other thing with that, to go along right with that, is that when you get your high school coaches or any coaches out there, club coaches, whatever, when you get that workout from that, the college coach or from the athlete, who this is what the college coach gave him, don't say, well, I don't know why he wants you to do this. Don't say those things. Just do what the workouts are. And then if you have a question, like both my colleagues here said earlier, contact the coach and just trying to get an understanding of what you're trying to do so that I'm giving it and I'm saying exactly what you want to be accomplished in this workout. Mm-hmm. Once you give a false thing, like, I don't know why, we're going to do it, but I don't know why you're doing this, then that puts something into the athlete's head, like, well, maybe we should be doing something wrong, mm-hmm. You know? So don't even do that. Don't even make a facial expression. Sometimes your facial expressions will say more than what your words say. So just go and do the workout. And if you have any questions, most likely you have the coach's number or email, and just contact, like, hey, I just want to make sure, as Charles said, I just want to have an understanding of what we're doing and why you're trying to accomplish this. Also, do you have an understanding? And it's like, it might help you in your program down the road.
Yeah. And my fellow high school coaches, I'm not shooting at y'all. I promise you I ain't. I've done it. And so that's why I'm able to talk to this point, because I've done it and it went wrong. But I also come to a meet and I hear y'all talking about it. And I'll tell you wrong then. But now on a public platform, I'm going to tell you dead ass wrong. Stop. Stop. Your job is done. You've got them to where they're at. You've done your job. Your job is done. Oh, send them a cash app to go get a pizza or something. Your job done, though.
Listen, let me tell you, man. I was at Campbell, kids working out. I was coaching throws and high jump at the time. Yeah, I coach throw. I still coach throw. So anyway. Okay. But I wanted to coach sprints. You know what I'm saying? I was young in my career at this time. So on the weekends, nothing to do in Buies Creek, North Carolina. All these kids call me like, Coach Moore, can we do some block stars? Can we do some block stars on the weekends? So I'm like, yeah. So I go unlock the garage. We do some block starts. And I'm like, hey, let's go up to the field and run a fast 300. Now, this is probably on like a Sunday. So we run a 300. They go all out. I don't think nothing about it. You know, we come out to the Monday to work out with their real coach, Coach Patrick, and they just look bad. You know, and one of the hurdler from Trinidad, he goes, yeah, I think 300 got me sore yesterday. And he's like, 300? It's like, Coach Mournier gave us a workout yesterday. It was off the chain, you know. So he got on me about that, you know, kind of explained to me, like, how dumb that was. You know, anytime you see somebody doing something and you just want to interrupt and put whatever workout in you want to put in, that's just a dumb way of doing stuff anyway. You know, I mean, you need to. I'm surprised I didn't get fired. But not only the high school coaches, but anybody that's looking to coach somebody, you should be familiar with, in this situation, Crystal Spray, just do what's been given. But even if you're getting an athlete that's coming from somebody else and now they're your athlete, you kind of need to know what they were doing beforehand before you start to progress them forward. That's just, you know, that's just a good way of doing stuff. So, like I said, we've all been guilty of, you know, the shenanigans that we're talking about. So, like I said, we're not taking shots, I'm trying to help.
Most definitely.
Anything else y'all want to add to that?
Nah.
All right. Obviously, I think the big thing and big thing that's going on in track and field, the big news, it's been Clemson cutting their men's track and field program. And it continues. I mean, William & Mary, on a positive note, William & Mary got their program reinstated. So I'm not sure. I think they reinstated all the programs. I'm not sure, but I know they reinstated track and field.
Yeah.
Clemson, and you just lost to Notre Dame last night, so the bad omens are already coming back to get you. What do y'all think about that? Y'all, you know.
I mean, I honestly don't understand it, and I guess I'll jump off the porch first, simply because I don't coach in a collegiate school, so can't nothing happen to me on that aspect. Is the main thing people want to say is the money issue. I don't think the program had been in the red since like 7-8 years. We all know the most men's program don't carry a lot of scholarships. I'm sure they carried at least a 50-man roster at the very least. You had so many kids just paying their way to go to school there. Mm-hmm. You're hosting indoor meets. Could they have hosted more? Yes. With an indoor facility, even if you ain't there, you probably could have held. You could have rented it out damn near every week. So could they have hosted more? Yes. But they hosted indoor meets. Y'all know the outdoor schedule a little bit better than me. But, I mean, it's not like they had facilities to where they couldn't gain more revenue. But with the revenue that they earned, they weren't in the red from the numbers that I saw in the last 7 to 8 years. So, if it's not money the issue, what's the problem? And so, this just looks like another institution that is allowing COVID to be the cover up of what they've been wanting to do all along. Because now what I want to see is what football facility is going to be paid for now. What coach is going to get a major increase? What basketball facility is going to be made? What coach is going to get an increase? Baseball, what like this ain't just coming from nowhere, because it wasn't a team that was in the red. You weren't going in debt having this team. So, I mean, and again, man, I said it on Twitter, and I'll say it again. I feel for this coaching staff. I feel for the athletes, for one, because the opportunity for them to gain an education that for some of them, their athletic ability was allowing them to get the education paid for. So I feel for them, and I pray that they can land somewhere else. For these coaches, I pray they land somewhere where they're actually respected and valued. Because what this shows me is you don't value these men and women that you hired to produce a top-tier program. Clemson isn't a program that's considered rinky-dink amongst our peers. That's a storied program that has amazing athletes come through there, Olympians that have come through there. Amazing coaching staff that have been on Olympic coaching staffs. And so this is a total, for one, it's a total slap in the face for the total sport. I've already said I honestly believe we are, the sport of track and field is endangered on a collegiate level. We're being hunted, and we've talked about this before. I don't know how to combat it. But I look at it as a total slap in the face. I feel for the athletes. I pray they land somewhere else. I feel for the coaches and their families. Because it's not like they were fired because they did a shitty job. These men and women were right in the middle of handling a pandemic, handling their kids as best of their ability, and getting ready to go fight for an indoor championship that you ain't even know whether the hell you was going to have or not. It's a tragedy. It's nothing short of that. And it just shows the mishandling of funds that is happening at the collegiate level. And I don't have the answer how to fix that.
I sure don't have the answer. The only thing I know is, I see the football facility with a bowling alley, a driving range. I see
a goddamn shop. Slide.
Yeah, I mean, the game room. I mean, my buddy sent me a recruiting video where they made a music video, a Thriller music video, and another video. I mean, you know, when I see money being spent like that in excess, and you cut the opportunities of other young men, you know, that's a bit worrisome. And I'm probably the only one. I grew up probably 45 minutes from Clemson. So, you know, there was a certain stigma about that area. I mean, my football team was ranked 9th in the nation in high school. Not one person went to Clemson. And so, you know, to cut that program right after you built that beautiful indoor facility, it just don't really add. And I'm not on the inside, so I don't know. But I don't believe it had anything to do with funds. I can't allow myself to believe that, you know, they can say it. I'm not saying it didn't, but nobody can make me say that I believe it has something to do with funds. And I don't. But like you said, I feel my heart is broken for those young men who had the opportunities taken away. I think the coaches all kept their jobs. So they have a women's team. So thank God for that. Those are good coaches. I just can't say enough as far as feeling bad for those guys. I'm going to choose to stay positive and say I think they're going to reinstate the program. But because everybody knows about it. I mean, even my mom called me today. Was like, you see, they, you know, canceled Clemson's program. And I'm like, she don't keep up with track and field. So, you know, for her to call and see it, there's going to be a lot of complaining going on. Like I said, they've had Olympians in that program. That was not some, you know, rinky-dink scrub program. That wasn't a legitimate storied program. So, you know, hopefully they reinstate it. If not, hopefully those young men find somewhere else to go that'll treat them the way they deserve to be treated. And not saying that about the coaches, but just about the school in general. Because I'm pretty sure the coaches loved on them and treated them how they, you know, deserve to be treated. But sometimes the hammer comes down from higher than the head coach. And unfortunately, this was one of those times. So, you know, hope those young men land on their feet.
Well, this is kind of hard, you know. I got a god brother who played football at Clemson some years ago. He's on a staff, football coaching staff for a moment. My godchildren, one of them goes there now. The other ones, their father was an all-star for the football team there. Many different Olympians, like you did say, Charles, that came through. I'm hoping this is just a ploy to get more giving back from the track and field alumni to give back to the program. But what I read from the AD was that it was take money away, but yet to save money, but yet you're going to redirect the money. So how are you saving money if you're redirecting it? So you're spending that money. I think most people don't really pay attention to the words. You know, when someone gives me something, I'm going to read it and I'm going to have I'm interpreted. But yet the interpretation was, an interpretation was bluntly there saying that we're going to use this money and put it to other programs. So then where's the savings if you're putting it towards other programs within the athletic department? So it's still going to be used. So you robbed the opportunity for these men. And what I was trying to understand is why was that the only program that was cut? You know, you see other universities when they cut, it's not just the one program, it's multiple programs that are being cut. So this was kind of ironic that you only targeted men's cross country, indoor and outdoor track. But Brandon, to your thing, yes, they had their job, and athletes still have their thing all the way up until the end of June. Once June comes, then as far as how they have everything for NCAA standpoint, you're going to have three coaches for a women's program. So,
yeah,
you know, they're going to have to make some cuts on the staff.
Well, I saw where it said the coaches will keep their stuff through this term.
Right, right. I said June, that ends. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's where when it's really going to get real on the employee side, and then also with that head coach, director have to make choices of who he's going to keep on that, in that program as far as coaches. You know, and that's right. Let's put another thing on him and what he's going to have to make his decisions. You feel for the student athletes, you feel for track and field as a whole. It's hard. It's very hard to take. And for Clemson, it's hard to take, especially when it's even more hard for me to take when it's the only program that you cut. You know, I can probably see if you said other programs in there, I said, okay, and bet. And then where is that money going towards? If you're going to put into something else or another sports team, then what's the purpose of using the money? You know, if you're saying it's cost savings, but you're not saving it, you're reinvesting in something else that's going to spend the money. I don't understand that. If there's this other revenue to keep the money coming in that you don't have to spend, you can keep into the safe hole, that's fine. In some cases, but not just to just really get rid of the sport and opportunities. Like you said, it's 12.6 scholarships, you know, for men's cross country track and field. And you have 50 people there. You know, not everybody's on scholarship. There's money coming to the institution. You're creating revenue from your indoor meets and camps, clinics that come through there, and other revenue to just the university itself. Again, as we said on one of our previous things, when I said, hey, if you want to save money, cut 10 scholarships on football. You know, that will save a whole bunch of programs out there. And because, you know, what's the purpose to have 85 scholarships when 85 people are not going to be on that field in a 2-year period or 3-year period? You know, these 12 scholarships don't even, 12.6 don't even equal the amount of people you have to have to qualify as a track meet. You know, 14.
Right.
You know, right. So they have done a great job of producing national caliber athletes, placing well at national championships, having national Olympians and whatnot. And this is not going to be taken lightly for what you've done to this historic program.
Well, I almost feel kind of, I'm going to ask you guys this question. It almost feels like either you need, I mean, I can't even say that now because Clemson, I would have considered Clemson, you know, creme de la creme as far as money goes.
Right.
I was about to say, you either need to be at a really, really financially safe Power Five school, or you need to be at a very poor school. Not a very poor school, but a school that does not have a ton of money. You know, like in my situation, we don't have the most lucrative athletic department in the world, obviously, but we bring to the school tuition because we don't give that many scholarships. We don't have that many scholarships to give. So we're actually adding to the school. I would consider us, you know, poor in relation to Clemson and obviously these Power Five schools. The school's kind of in the middle where you got track teams that spend a ton of money, but it's kind of like if anything happens, you know, they're the first on the chopping block. And I'm like, is it really safe to be at those kind of schools right now?
I saw something, of course, on Twitter. A coach posed a question, and it was, do you think we'll start seeing more coaches and – more coaches go down a level to be more secure? And will we see more dominant high school track athletes pick a situation that's more secured? Because we all were thinking at the end of the day, the Power Fives would be the most secured places. And now we're seeing that it's not. And so that was a question that was posed. And yeah, Brandon, I don't know if I have an answer for that. I don't think.
The only reason I ask is because, you know, when COVID first hit, a lot of people were like, man, you know, you had a small school, y'all gonna be financially safe? And I'm like, well, we add to the school. You know, there's no deficit there. We're not taking away from the school. We add to, you know, what the school needs. So if they got rid of us, that'd be almost like shooting themselves in the foot, you know? So I wasn't really worried. I'm like, I'm really worried about the schools that, if the track program isn't bringing in money, but they're taking flights to Texas Relays and, you know, Penn, wherever, and they're spending a ton of money, but they're not bringing in money, I'd be worried if I was at one of those schools, you know? That's just something that I was thinking about, because I'm just like, man, obviously they're not going to cut football. If they got to cut something, they're not going to cut basketball, they're not going to cut baseball, you know, they're going to cut, we're seeing it, they're cutting track and field. But, you know, the scary thing was, that, like I said, this was Clemson. This was a Power Five school.
Yeah.
So it was like, I don't know. You know, like, I thought those were the schools that were going to be safe. I thought those were the teams that were going to be safe, which just makes it that much more baffling. Like, I don't know. I could, you know, as harsh as it may have been, I could see some of the smaller schools cutting sports and we need to save some money because kids might not be coming back to school because of COVID, blah, 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 blah. But, like I said, I just didn't see that. I was blindsided with Clemson when that happened.
Yeah.
I think that the most probably secure people in our sport are the Division III, because there's no scholarship. Pretty much, it's you know, all tuition driven. And most of those, a good amount of the coaches there are teaching at the same time. So they have security. And Division II, Division I, it comes down to, also, do you have a football team on campus or not? Those who don't have a football team, you're pretty much going to be kind of safe, because if you have a basketball team, you're bringing in money. You know, they're bringing in money from the NCAA tournament. Money's coming in, it can help suffice for everything that's going on. If you have football and you're not winning, and you're not bringing any money in for football, then you're in jeopardy of losing our sport and other sports that are so-called non-revenue. With the Power Five, I'm praying and I'm thinking that this is a ploy to get more of the more money in from the alumni and others outside supporters, is to have more money in there, and then they will reinstate the track and field program back. And I only say that because you only targeted one, you know, instead of a whole bunch of them. And I just think that now, you really see a lot of the, I've heard so far since that time, since they announced it, a lot of the alumni are uproared, and they're trying to do things to pressure, and whether that's going to be through giving and stuff like that to maintain it happen. And that might be just a ploy from ADs to get more resources back in from the alumni to give back. So,
I know.
I can see that being a way from an administrator trying to do that in order to coax people to give back. Not saying that's the case, but I'm saying I can see that being an angle for them to do it and reinstate back. And there's a lot of programs that have been threatened to be dropped and stuff. And then alumni start giving back in, and the program's back up and running. And it may not be at the level it was at the time, but yet it's back. Those programs are up, back and running, so it could be a ploy.
But that's also the thing, though, Tyree. Like, I pray it's not a ploy, because we've seen programs who, I guess, at the end of the day, you can tell that it might have been a ploy. Mm-hmm. But you did so much damage.
Yeah.
In terms of, especially in terms of recruiting, to even get kids on campus to want to come to your institution. Because now I don't want to come there because I don't know whether or not the next year you're going to be trying to get rid of the program again because of financial reasons. So I hope it's not a ploy, because you still damage the program.
Yeah.
Whatever state is in right now is going to be worse if you reinstate it and continue on. Because you're not getting the top caliber kids no more, because it's not safe to come there, especially not initially.
I agree.
So I hope it's, for that sake, I hope it's not a ploy. From a recruiting standpoint, you got these amazing coaches that's going to have to work with subpar talent, because you're not going to be able to get the dogs in. Because as a high school coach, I'm not sending my dog there because I'm not sure whether or not your program is going to be there is going to be there for the next 4 years that my child is there.
Mm-hmm. Well, fellas, anything else y'all want to add on that subject? Any shout outs?
Clemson stupid.
That's not a shout out.
I got a shout out.
That was my anything hey. Else you wanted to add.
I'm giving a shout out to Joe Biden and Kamala Harris.
Hey,
they won it. They did it, man. I mean, shout out to Black women for making that happen. I think it was Atlanta, Milwaukee, Detroit. Y'all really showed up and showed out. As we know, they are the backbone of this community. So shout out to Black women everywhere that made that happen. We love y'all. I'm excited. Excited we got the other guy out. And we got them in, so I take it you guys voted just like I did, so you know we should all give ourselves a pat on the back. But that's my shout out.
Bye bye, Agent Orange.
I posted on Facebook. Y'all seen Paid in Full, where Cameron sits down, he tells the guy, he's like, man. Well, he didn't say this, but he's like, people get shot. But the meme was like, oh, people go to jail every day, B. You be all right.
People get shot every day, B.
Dedication to Johnny. But did y'all have any shout outs?
I'm going to give my shout out to Chad Black again in the Black Track Club. Started me on this thing, gave me a vision. He may not see this, but I hope he does. Someone sends it out to him. Chad Black, who got away from track and field now, was an All-American, All-Conference at University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Hurdler, came down to Life University, started everything off in the Black Track Club, and helped me keep the vision to do this sport. And helped me really to transition to also sprints, dealing with 400 meter runners. So that's my shout out.
I'm gonna give mine to Ginger Belka. For stopping me from being totally bored with my life. If I'd have moved dad on Maryland and worked the government job, like, I would have hated it. I know, regardless of the money, I would have hated it. So thank you for giving me the opportunity to, you know, stay here and do what I love. And thank you for believing in me. Appreciate you. And she might not see this, but if anybody sees it and shows it to her, thank you very much, and I love you.
All right.
Well, that wraps up this episode of Life Thought Sports Training with T. Price, and in association with Real Talk with Brandon Morton and friends. Peace.
Till next time.